Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
Welcome to the Make It Right podcast. I'm Janet Eastman. This week on the show, we discuss how best to balance technology and the human touch when addressing challenges along your supply chain. It all comes down to communication. Different countries and cultures communicate differently. And if you want to get the best out of people and have everyone working together, you need to communicate in a manner that's most effective in that country. Mark Udall is the president of Remy Chic. He has spent years sourcing raw materials from India and China and working with manufacturing processes that include multiple countries. He joins us today to talk about some of the best practices he's developed for addressing issues along the supply chain. Mark, pleasure to have you on the Make It Right podcast.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on.
Tell me a little bit about your business so people can have an understanding of your supply chain and the challenges that you face.
Sure. We're a hair extension manufacturing firm, and it puts us in a little bit different situation than most manufacturing firms today, because we depend enormously on human labor. If you're more dependent on technology, which most manufacturing firms are, and machines, and how those machines are operated by humans, you can create, through various processes, you set the machines up, you set up the interface between the human and the machine, and away you go, and you're producing widgets, so to speak. When you have mostly human labor involved, still using machines, but not nearly the level of automation that you find in most industries, you wind up having to completely rethink the way you develop those processes. And your quality control process actually is really tied in sharply with your quality assurance. So that as you're designing a process, it's not just what will create the end product that you need and the way you need it created from a time standpoint and cost standpoint, but how to create that process so that it's easily repeatable by human, including, typical human errors. So it makes it a much more complicated process, I think, at least what I found than prior to that with my experience with more automated type manufacturing systems.
Are they creating the product in different countries? And is that part of your problem with communication?
Yes. What we do is we can only work in countries that have textile schools because we need individuals that understand and have the basis of textile. Whether you're coloring wool or cashmere or processing wool or cashmere or human hair, it's all protein-based fibers. For us, we need that basic understanding of how, the human fiber, how human fibers, the protein-based fibers operate, what they will or will not put up with, the concepts behind the processes, so that when they start learning the process, they're not just doing ABC. They understand how ABC works. So when there's slight variations, they can adapt to it because they understand the underlying principles behind what our processes are trying to achieve. So it's really important that we have a skilled labor, an educated labor force, and that restricts where we can manufacture because, where those schools are located. And you're really hugely, Italy, India, China, some of the bigger, countries for this type of stuff. The U.S. used to be way back in the day, but textile industry is dead here. So they have to have that base of education and then us showing them how it translates into human hair if they've never worked with human hair, if they're new to the industry.
Right. So when you're working in these different countries and you've been doing this for a number of years, let's talk about when you figured out that people in different countries communicate differently. And when did you have that aha moment?
Well, we realized that for a long time we tried to manufacture in India, do all of our processes in India. And we just were getting too much issues on the quality control side. And no matter what we did on the quality assurance side, it wasn't giving us different results. There was still way too many the fail rate was way too high. So someone mentioned something about, believe it or not, Apple manufacturing in China. And the thought process was there's a lot of product coming out of China that's faulty hair product wise, and there's a lot of possibly out of India that are faulty, but perhaps they're failing in different parts of the process. And if they're failing in different parts of the process, then you just assign the processes to each country that they're most equipped to deal with.
Right.
And that has to do with personality traits, the way they communicate. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it. So it took a long time to understand, A, in India, when a no is a yes is a no is a yes is a maybe, and all of that communication. And in China, understanding when they're telling you no because they don't understand it, so they don't think it's possible. And when they're telling you no, like they understand it, it's just not possible. You know, they're not, it has nothing to do with anything other than, hey, we've tried this 1,000 times, it's not possible. And you can't do that through a computer. You know, you have to be there and you have to learn about the culture and understand their ways of communicating so that you can kind of communicate the information in a way they can receive it. And the best example I can give is, we had a large amount of raw material that showed up in China and it had a ton of defects, according to the reports you're getting from our manufacturing division. And our Indian division doesn't make those kind of mistakes. We've always set it up this way so the Chinese and the Indian divisions almost kind of use each other's checks and balances. And what they were describing involved a large amount of product. So I found out Sunday morning and I was on a flight Monday morning to Asia. To our manufacturing facilities in China. And I showed up, and what they had described was not what was going on. They had described as, there's too many short hairs, this couldn't be good raw material, the Indian team made a mistake, or they got ripped off or something. That's what the theory was. And I was looking at this, and I was like, no, this is how it comes. We've had this sometimes, and they just, even though we've been doing this for years, there was a disconnect because this batch was a little bit worse than most. So after spending 4 or 5 days in China with conference calls, India, you know, Skyping them in, I was able to figure out that the Chinese were being overwhelmed by the inconsistency in the length of the hair, and they couldn't deal with it in the ways that they would normally deal with it. They were used to everything being handed to them more perfectly. So we created a whole nother process that we didn't have up to this point. Once we instituted that process and the Chinese knew they had to do that process and the Indians knew what the process was going to be, because up until that point, Indians just, they did their job. Our employees in India did their job and they sent the raw material to China. They didn't really understand what that raw material was going to be used for. They didn't understand how it got from what they were doing to the finished product. So after finishing up in China, I flew to India and did a training there. And it was the first time where I spent a lot of time training employees on processes they were not going to perform so that they understood how their process fit in. And it made a huge difference. And that really was a turning point for the company from gaining a level of consistency that our competitors have yet to find. And the whole reason why we started a manufacturing firm instead of being like most of the industry, which was resellers.
Right. So, go ahead.
That was an eye opener for me. A real eye opener.
Yeah. So by giving them a bigger picture, you were able to pull out of them what you actually needed. So do you think that this is part of the reason that some companies really struggle when they implement Six Sigma or a lean process or whatever? Like, it's just not reaching the level that they thought it was supposed to because they're not dealing with the people first before they implement those programs.
Yes. I think what's going on is, in a lot of ways, the bean counters have taken over, you know, corporate America. And lean manufacturing and Six Sigma and Kaizen, and they all have their place in the manufacturing processes. Absolutely, they do. But anyone can be taught those processes. And that's not meant to be disrespectful to those who've gone through the education and the hard work. It does. It takes that. And you have to be, I guess, a certain level of understanding of supply chains and procurement and manufacturing, you know, to be able to go through this. But that can be taught. I can't teach someone how to operate in India and China without them actually just doing it for years. You can't teach that in 6 months. You can't teach that in a year. through textbooks or computer programs. They've got to live it. They have to understand it. And I think there's a lot of parts, a lot of industries that they get so caught up in demand planning and ERP systems and sitting behind a computer and letting the numbers tell you, you know, what supplier to use and why the supplier is broken and how to fix that, or why is our manufacturing, or why is our contract manufacturing something not working. And the numbers tell them it's not working, but to fix it, you have to go outside that box and you really have to communicate with the people and they have to trust you. And you have to understand, especially in Asia, it's relationship based, not contract based. And that understanding the culture, understanding communication, understanding, you know, what they value is crucial to not only fixing the problems that you have in your supply chain or manufacturing, but fixing it quickly. You know, like, no one wants to, you know, burn money for 12 or 18 months while they figure out a problem.
And, you know, you're talking about language barriers and issues in, even in North America, when you're all talking the same language, it basically comes down to comprehension, right? You're saying something and people are comprehending it in a different way. And then you put that into a different language and a different culture. And you really have to work very hard to make sure that what you're saying is being understood by that person on the other side of the world in the way that you need them to, right? And like,
yeah,
that's a crazy and incredible challenge. How do you deal with that on a regular basis? Do you run into this daily?
You run into it less and less as you form relationships with your
employees. When you say relationships, are you talking about individuals?
Yes, you have to, I think in any business, especially in Asia, you have to have a few individuals at the top that you've spent all the time with. You can't do it with every employee. It's impossible. But that you've built a relationship with on a communication, I equate it to like having like a life, you know, having a marriage or a partner, you know, where, you know, it's how they communicate, how they receive, understanding how they communicate, what they react to, what they don't react to, so that you get to a point where you're always in sync with them, even if it's over a phone. You don't have to be in person. And then they are very good at then disseminating that information. So you have to find, as your leader, someone A, who can train others and be a leader, and B, you know, has the patience to build that relationship with you so that you guys can get on the same page. And it's so crucial. So that's that for me. It was always about relationships. And I learned early on that contracts meant nothing in India and China. They mean nothing. The court systems, everything else aren't there to develop. You know, the contract is only as good as it's enforceable. So things are going to get done faster. The mistakes will be fixed quicker because they want to do that, because they have a good relationship with you, because they trust you. They see as someone that there's a partner they're working with. If you do not have that relationship, your business ultimately is going to suffer. And I don't know how many people who don't have any experience in Asia understand that.
Right. You operate your business by ethically sourcing and manufacturing your raw materials and operating in an environmentally responsible way. What additional challenges arise because of that?
In India, it's not very complicated to do that, because the way we buy raw material, buying them from the temples, and it's very easily controlled. China, because of the manufacturing side, where there's no real chemical use or dyes in the processes that we're doing in India, we are in China. So you're dealing with more environmental impact. And the odd thing about China is, if you are not required to abide by any certain restrictions, because they're adding more and more restrictions in metropolitan areas, in different areas within the city. But even if it's not required, once you begin to do that, you have to do it right. So you can't just say, oh, well, we don't require you to do this, so the fact you're doing it at 50% is great. No. That's not what it's like. If you're going to do this, you have to do this. So you have to go through the inspection process and everything else. So by doing it the right way, and in a way you don't have to do it, you ultimately create more regulations for yourself, because you've almost availed yourself to the regulation by setting this up. So there was a lot of added expenses, and it was a little difficult for us because there wasn't a whole lot of operating history on how the Chinese government was going to handle this. It was a new regulation and everything. So it was a bit of a feeling out process. We learned a lot about how the local government operated. We already knew, but you know, it really gave us a lot of insight. So I'm really happy we went through that because it strengthened relationships with the government and it taught us a lot just about not what they think is right or wrong today, but just their thought process, which can be a little mysterious sometimes over there. So it was a good experience, but making it ethical from our standpoint, in which our employees are not being exposed to fumes and chemicals in the water, all our processes are very safe. We did it so that those of us in the U.S. could go to bed at night and sleep well, not because the local government required us to do that. Nor do any of our partners really require it. We just do it. So ultimately, I think it makes our products better. It makes our factory cleaner. I think it's better not just for the environment, but for employees and for the quality of the products. But we created ourselves headaches that weren't required to be created. It's not like in this country, you have OSHA and you have EPA and everyone's putting down your neck and the local municipality has regulations and zoning regulations. We kind of availed ourselves of that in China. We didn't have to, we chose to. So that was the complication that we kind of brought into our company out of choice. I think it was a good choice because we actually got some added benefits, as I said, that we didn't expect to get from doing it. So it was definitely worth it.
Okay. Well, Mark, you have a really interesting business and you have some incredibly interesting business challenges, but I get your communications problems and your comprehension problems between all the different countries, and I really appreciate you sharing your stories with us today. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. It was a good time.
Mark Udall is the president of Remy Chic, and that is our Make It Right podcast this week. So please feel free to share it with other people in the manufacturing community, and I hope we'll see you next time. Thank you.